This is a poem we have read often in this congregation when we meet the difficulties of the world. The Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the middle of the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wooddrake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free.
Good morning. I grew up in Conway, the village of Conway, not North Conway. Our house was at the Four Corners, the site of the one stoplight on Route 16. My dad owned a dairy a mile from our house where my mother, three brothers, and I worked. He bought milk from the farmers along the Saco River plain of the West Side Road. My schools from first grade through high school were less than a half mile from home. When I was 4 years old, my parents bought a small camp on Silver Lake, 13 miles south. It was framed by the mountains named for the local chiefs, Passaconway, Shikarawa, Kankamaugus. My whole childhood was contained in that valley, in the shadow of Mount Washington. Predictably, I couldn't wait to leave at age 18. But by the time I was 30, I had been in the world enough to appreciate both the beauty and the refuge of the valley. It has stayed my refuge for 30 years, and I imagine will become even more precious in the future. We still have the camp on Silver Lake, and that's where I go to find the peace of wild things. It's tempting to look at those granite mountains and believe that they represent eternity, that the forests and rivers will always support life of the maple trees and apple trees, the trout, the moose, and the bear, that the lake will stay pristine, and the call of the loons will be there to inspire awe in the next seven generations. But I know things are changing. You may know that too, but some of you better than I. The maple syrup production is erratic. The apple crop suffers from early warmth followed by late frost. The New Hampshire moose population has decreased by 40% in the last 3 years. And the loon chick numbers are decreasing. I hate knowing this. I alternate between seeking out information about the changes and then turning away when I can't tolerate what I learn. Joanna Macy writes about the importance of honoring our pain for the world, the profound grief, anger, and guilt we experience for treating our earth as a supply house and a sewer to feed the insatiable needs of the industrial growth society in which we are caught. She writes, "Grief, anger, guilt are not adequate to convey the feelings we experience, for these connote emotions long familiar to our species. The feelings that assail us now cannot be equated with ancient dreads of mortality. Their source lies less in concerns for the personal self than in apprehension of collective suffering, of what happens to our own and other species, to the legacy of our ancestors, to unborn generations, and to the living body of the earth." Fortunately, she and many others also believe that it is not too late to find ways to sustain our lives and the life of the planet. Embracing and acknowledging the pain is one part of that process that actually contributes to finding ways to survive. By fostering a shift of consciousness and a willingness to take steps to move in a different direction. She calls these seeing with new eyes and going forth, which are the topics of the next two services. We do want you to come back after this. So, but for right now, back to honoring the pain. When we turn toward it, seeing it, hearing it, and feeling it, we thereby become able to experience compassion, which literally means to suffer with other people, other creatures, the earth. This is not easy to talk about with friends or family. Bring it up at a dinner party and you may not get invited back. Talk to your family about it and, well, what happens in my family is someone cracks a joke. Or I'm back to being the little sister who has the audacity to act like a girl. Part of the reason I asked to do this service was that I wanted to have the license to speak to you, to a friendly audience used to holding each other's sorrows. There are a million reasons to avoid the pain. Fear of becoming mired in despair and hopelessness, fear of being seen as negative, weak, overly insensitive, unpatriotic, you know them. And we've all learned ways to avoid the pain, distraction, numbing, and going hyper-rational. We need to pinpoint exactly why the winter tick population is increasing and killing the moose. It may have something to do with warmer temperatures in November and April when the ticks would typically be killed off by the cold, which may have something to do with the increasing temperature in the Northeast for the past 30 years, which only 97% of scientists agree has something to do with the increase of greenhouse gases and burning from burning fossil fuels. But we really don't know. Okay, I'm letting my frustration show here. The most dangerous response, however, is apathy. Turning away in the face of feeling overwhelmed, literally the refusal to feel. And it is so tempting. Each of us have different things that pull at our hearts. What are yours? For me, it's the stories and images of wildlife suffering from the impact of climate change. The 34,000 sea walruses that hauled in on one small piece of land in Alaska this October because there was no ice. Many died in the chaos of finding a place to rest. The 1,200 sea turtles who had followed the warm currents further north to Cape Cod and then experienced hypothermia and beached in the December cold. The moose calf in northern New Hampshire that died from winter tick infestation. The juvenile loon left in the mud of a Wyoming reservoir, which was drained for irrigation. The September-October issue of the Audubon magazine was devoted to birds and climate change. I'm still trying to read it, but I just can't get past the beginning photos. The photo of the juvenile loon is on the bulletin board outside the kitchen. These stories hit me both emotionally and rationally. Emotionally, I can imagine the confusion, the fear, the stress that these creatures endure when they encounter such drastic habitat changes. Yes, animals can adapt, but not at the rate is being required. And rationally, even with my limited understanding of biology and ecology, what is happening to these animals is clear evidence that we are massively disrupting complex natural systems. In the words of Chief Seattle, "What is man without the beasts? If all the beasts are gone, men would die from great loneliness of spirit. For whatever happens to his beasts, soon happens to the man. All things are connected." What I have come to know is this. My refuge at Silver Lake is not safe. The wild things are not at peace. It is we humans who have threatened that peace, and it is up to us to restore it. So how do we honor our pain for the world and not become owned by it? Sometimes it can help, what can help, to allow yourself to feel it, to speak it, and know that you are heard. At the Climate March in New York, there was an area devoted to honoring fears about the impact of climate change. Each person wrote their name on a ribbon, along with something that they were afraid of losing in the chaos of climate change, and then hung it on a rope. Another person chose a ribbon, went to a microphone, and read what was written and ended the reading with, "I am with you." The gathered crowd responded, "We are with you." The simple power of expressing our fears and having that expression witnessed and held in the group was profound. Thank you for being my witness this morning. I suffer with you, and I am with you.